Gordon Strong joins me this week to discuss the new BJCP style guidelines and also how to judge your beer and make better beer. This is Beersmith Podcast number 266.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 266, and it's late September 2022. Gordon Strong joins me this week to discuss the new BJCP style guidelines and also how to judge your beer and make better beer. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brew house controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brew house controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with a new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And I launched a new version of the Beersmith Forum a few weeks ago, as well as made some significant security upgrades. The Beersmith Discussion Forum is a place where you can discuss all things brewing, including techniques, ingredients, equipment, pro brewing, and our Beersmith recipe software. Join the conversation today at beersmith.com/forum. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back Gordon Strong. Gordon is the President Emeritus and Highest Level Beer Judge of the Beer Judge Certification Program. He's also author of the books Modern Homebrew Recipes and Brewing Better Beer. Gordon, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Brad. It's great to be back. I'm doing great.
So what have you been up to these last 11 months since I had you on the show?
Well, trying to get back into the swing of things. Doing some traveling, doing some writing and researching, helping people with their beer exams, going out and meeting homebrewers, you know, the things I like to do.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to be back in person. Enjoyed seeing you at HomebrewCon and of course at the Brew Your Own event last November as well. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. And thanks for bringing that mead of yours to the HomebrewCon. That was delicious.
Yeah, Gordon's always sneaking my mead at HomebrewCon. He grabs a little bit of it and then sits there for about a half an hour and sips it. And then he sips the rest of it when I'm not looking. I take that as a compliment. Thank you. Yeah,
it's absolutely a compliment.
So at the end of 2021, you launched a new set of style guidelines. I think it was like around the 31st of December, right?
It wasn't quite then, but it was a Christmas present for sure.
Yeah. And of course, it was labeled the BJCP 2021 style guide. What are some of the major changes with the new style guide?
Well, I wrote an article for this on the BJCP website that summarized the changes that were coming, and I characterized the update as minor, which to me meant we weren't making any major sweeping changes to the name and numbering system. It's the thing that sort of gets people confused during competitions and when they're studying for the exam. But since we didn't really make any huge changes there, what I did try to do was to actually rewrite the style profiles, the sensory descriptions of all the styles, so they'd be more consistent. Use sort of similar language. The introductory sections to everything were rewritten, all new examples. So it's, you know, it's a real kind of refresh. We did try to listen to all the comments that we'd get and if there were confusing bits about the guidelines, wording that didn't really carry the meaning we thought it did, then we tried to rewrite those to clear them up. I did have all the history sections reviewed by beer historian Ron Pattinson, who's he's given us some criticism in the past, mostly rightly deserved. But I gave him a pre-release copy and asked him to, you know, please go through it with a red pen and you know, tell me what you think. And he actually came back like amazingly positive. So, I consider that sort of a good accomplishment.
That's really cool. Yeah. I've had Ron on the show a number of times. He's very, very knowledgeable, especially on the European and UK styles. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's mostly what he was looking at. He's like, I don't really understand these American things, so I'm not going to look at them. But he said, I figured you understand those. Yep. Sure enough.
In early January, I entered all of these back into Beersmith as an add-on. And I noticed right away that a lot of the descriptions are quite a bit longer than they used to be, right?
I don't know. I didn't really count the words. I did try to go through and clarify them. I did try to go through and make sure that they weren't just for people in the competitions, but they're also for people studying for the exam. So those people are looking for something that is an absolute complete description.
Right.
So I tried to make sure all that was present. There were a couple of other areas that got a little extra love.
Sure.
Some of the sour beers. I reached out to some of the people that do the Milk the Funk thing, and they had some comments. So I paid attention to those we reworked Berliner Weiss and some of the other beer styles and addressed some of the common faults that they said they found in sour beers often. So hopefully they're in a better shape. Mm-hmm. I also took a look at all these beers that like are getting lactose put in them since the last guidelines and tried to make sure that was allowable. In the past, sometimes I talked about styles allowing, added fermentables, and people would rightly point out that, well, lactose isn't really a fermentable, so technically, you shouldn't be able to enter it there. I'm like, well, okay, so I'll change the wording so it's clear where lactose beers can be entered.
Yeah.
Aside, I still wish people wouldn't make them, but
You're not a fan, I guess.
If I want a milkshake, I'll have an actual milkshake. If I want a beer, I'll have a beer. But I prefer them separate.
Interesting.
So, there were a few moves and renames. I said we didn't really do much of this, but, we moved a few things around. Mm-hmm. We took, Goza out of the, historical section since people seem to be making it a whole lot more and moved into the sour, European sour. Keller beer sort of became more of a specialty beer and we parked it in historical. Some of the beers came out of the provisional guidelines and went into the local styles. So we did touch up, some things like that. Hmm.
Well, what's the process you go through, the BJCP goes through when proposing, editing, and finally approving a new style guide?
Yeah, we try not to change the guidelines that often, maybe once every 5 years or so, mm-hmm. Because so much depends on them. The people studying for the exams, people grading the exams, they have to have common references. The people like entering their beers for competition. They don't like to see a lot of changes year over year. So, we try not to do them that often. Mm-hmm. And we also sort of have this cadence where we sort of switch back and forth between major updates and minor updates. So if you think about it, like, you know, we're aiming for some stability over like a 10-year period before we open up and do something different. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have a, you know, as you'd imagine, sort of a phased approach where we think about the concepts first before digging into the details. We sit around and think about, are there any things broken that we've seen based on our observations in competitions? You know, are people, you know, is there no place to enter some beers? Are people using them correctly? Are there any big problems? Mm-hmm. So we think about those kind of things. And then we also start thinking about like, how styles have changed. You know, are there new styles that we want to include? Do we know enough about them? Have we learned anything new about old styles? That kind of thing. Hmm. And then we just sort of start mapping them out.
Hmm. And, you know, when there's dozens of historical and regional styles that emerge almost every year, how do you decide which ones are worth including in the style guide and which ones, you know, really aren't?
Yeah, it's, I want to be careful. It's like you drop the word worth and you have to be careful about like assigning relative merit to styles.
I should say should be included in the style guide.
Well, it's more like so what the style guidelines are, what I describe them as, is they're a categorization system for beer, mm-hmm. with detailed sensory profiles. So do we know enough about a proposed style to be able to define it as such? I mean, you and I can just sort of agree that, oh yeah, this beer is a style, but do we know enough about it that I could actually write a description in that amount of detail? Can I point to commercial examples? Is there a demand for it? Are people entering this? Sometimes we see people entering beers into specialty categories, mm-hmm. Because that's where they fit. And if we see enough of a certain type of beer going into specialty that, you know, hey, in a competition, you know, maybe we want to be able to break this out and have it judged against its peers. Yeah, then we might consider it. So that's if we start seeing something new. The other way that we like would look at a style is if it's something sort of old. And in that case, is there some new research about it? Did we learn something new about it? It's difficult if you're trying to pick something that isn't currently being made, because, you know, you're trying to describe it to judges so they can judge it, right? And if they've never tasted it before and you've never tasted it before, you know, aren't you like the blind men trying to describe the elephant and just sort of feeling around?
I mean, you must run into that a lot with the historical styles, right? Because some of them have no commercial examples and many of them haven't been brewed for 50 years or more, right?
Yeah. So we have to go based on what we know. You know, were there contemporaneous descriptions of these beers? And often historical descriptions of beers don't really cut it in modern terms. You know, they'll talk about how the beer makes them feel, but they won't talk about what they're actually perceiving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm an engineer. I don't really care how people feel. You know, I care about the data, you know, something that we can, you know, assess. So if we have enough information to actually to go on, then we think about writing it up. And one of the things that we've added since 2015 were this notion of provisional styles that, mm-hmm. They can be published on the BJCP website, you know, as sort of like a draft style. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, hey, you know, here's something to play with. We think about it. We're not sure that this is as solid as other things in the guidelines, but if this has some value to you and you want to go out and make it or try to judge it, you know, go for it, and then we'll see. You know, it's an iterative process. So, you know, we might learn something about it. You know, as people start to make it, we might see that people are interpreting the style in a certain way, and then we can turn around and write it up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a lot harder than people think, because it's not just giving a style a name. Like the new thing people are talking about is cold IPA. Like,
right.
Okay, cold IPA is a thing. Why don't you make that a style?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't really make styles. It's like brewers make styles, and if people are making it enough and it sort of stays static enough, that we can start defining it, sure, that's great. So, you know, convince people to go make the style, and then, you know, we can come by and document it.
But I assume you probably want to avoid it being a fad, right? I mean, I notice you don't have a style guideline for clear beer, right? Zima, right?
I mentioned that in there. I mentioned in specialty IPA, you could have Zima clear IPA.
Zima clear IPA.
Yeah. The story that I'd offer there is Brut IPA, because, you know, Brut IPA was popular for about a week and a half.
Yeah, it was.
You know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And by the time I wrote up, so we wrote up a style on this, and it became hard to find examples because all the examples were one-offs. You know, people would make it and decide, like, oh, well, nobody's buying this, or, oh, this was terrible. And, you know, they stopped making it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that brings me to my question. When do you decide to drop or merge an existing style that may now either be minor or appear to be out of favor at this time?
Yeah, that's kind of a tough one. This would allow me to draw a distinction between the BJCP and the Brewers Association guidelines, because their guidelines are updated every year, and they're trying to describe the current beer market. And the BJCP is really designed for homebrew competitions, and it's like the state of the current market is of less current interest to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you think about homebrewers aren't always trying to brew what commercial brewers are making. You know, homebrewers could make anything.
And right.
They could make beers with sort of no current commercial potential just because they want to make it. And they want to be able to enter it in a competition. So there ought to be standards against which those beers could be judged.
Mm-hmm.
So the BJCP guidelines have to not only describe, you know, mostly what the current market is like, but we also have to have the references for the beer styles that have existed in the past that may not be popular anymore, but that homebrewers might still make. So, you know, we're kind of reluctant to drop styles. We might move them around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in seemingly demoting styles, just because there might be other ones that are, you know, better matches for the category they're in. So we add styles when we know enough about them that we can write a description.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really hard for us to drop a style, because even if they're not making it anymore, people could. And it doesn't really hurt anything for the style to be described. It's, you know, it's like a fire extinguisher, you know, break glass in case of emergency.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we think about them that way, but we might move them around where they make sense. And that's usually where the reorganizations come into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, switching over to judging for a minute, how do you take a given style guideline and apply it when you're actually sitting down and trying to judge a beer?
Yeah, like you mean a individual style?
Yeah, exactly. Let's say you're judging a particular style in a competition, and you pull out the style guideline. How do you apply it and make sure that beer is what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, most people pull out their phones or a printed version. And if you're using a phone, make sure you're actually using the same version of the guidelines that the competition is. Because not all apps that had the 2015 guidelines have been updated for 2021.
Sure.
So kudos to the people that have, like you.
Yeah.
The judges should look at the reference and just generally scan it over to see, is it what they learned? Has it changed significantly? But get sort of the overall impression. You know, what's the balance of the beer?
Mm-hmm.
What sets this beer apart from other beers? Set that mental expectation before you even drink the beer. And then you might use the reference as you're judging it. It's like, well, you know, the body of this is medium. Is that in range for the beer? And usually judges only look at that if they're concerned that somehow it might be out of style.
Mm-hmm.
So they use it as a reference as they're going.
Yeah, I know sometimes I get feedback from people saying that, you know, they put it in a particular category and some of the judges will say, well, you know, this would have done better in this other category over here, right?
Yeah. I don't like writing that on a score sheet
when sure.
I'm a judge.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, you owe the brewer a detailed evaluation, regardless if you think it's in style or not. So always describe the sensory characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know. Do you find anything that's kind of wrong with the beer? Then you might like talk about, you know, the competition aspects. Like, well, if this was a little fresher, it would get a better score. If this beer was in this other category, mm-hmm. it might fit better. Sometimes if I think it's a good beer, that would do better in another category, I'll go as far as to say I would have given it this score in this other category.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so, that's a hint.
Yeah. I want them to feel like they got their money's worth.
Yeah. 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 Well, since beer judging is really such an important skill for any brewer, how do you suggest brewers become better at judging outside of, you know, simply becoming a certified judge? Are there methods you can use when you're sitting down sampling a beer, trying to get better at judging it?
Oh, it's kind of hard to pick up these things on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the harder skills are more what I would call the calibration type skills. Like, it's like you have certain perceptions about a beer, but then when you try to say, okay, I think this is not quite right, how much do I penalize the beer for this type of error?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I usually penalize brewing errors, you know, fermentation flaws and things like that, more severely than minor style, discrepancies.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that people get a feel for that unless they talk to other people about how they assess it. So, get experience judging beer with other people, sort of in a competition-like setting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just like sit around the bar and say, yeah, you know, beer's good. Be in a place where you can critically assess it and have a good conversation about it. I mean, that doesn't have to be at a competition, but you know, you have to be taking it seriously enough with the people who are with you. So people who are also interested in judging
fellow brewers maybe or homebrew
club.
Yeah.
Or brewers who are judges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's a really tough skill to learn by book.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you go about judging and sampling an individual beer? I know you did a great presentation, when we were at the Brew Your Own event, where you talked about, you know, different ways of getting aroma off the beer and, you know, judging the color of the beer and all these other things. Can you provide us just a couple tips here?
Sure. Like you said, it's like, I have an hour long talk on this subject.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot to it, but, really you're trying to engage your senses and capture things. And, you know, I don't have a beer, I've got a glass of water, but, you know, I can show you the, you know, how you can move the glass up and down. So like
under the nose. Yeah. I'm going to describe it here a little bit for the people on audio.
Yeah. So I call it like a low sniff and a high sniff. Like mm-hmm. if you smell, if you've tilted the glass at an angle, there's a low side and a high side, you know, smell from the low side, but then move your nose all the way up to the other end.
And a lot of times you pick up something different, right?
You do. And, it actually comes down to different, aromatics have different molecular weights. So some are heavier than others and, you know, they kind of float off the beer, differently. You know, I've had people who, you know, experienced brewers. I mean, at the BYO event, I mean, Ashton Lewis,
mm-hmm.
you know, pro brewer. He's like, you know, I thought you were just making this stuff up. He goes, then I tried it. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he was kind of amazed and like, yeah, you know, I'm not making this stuff up.
I like, one of my favorites was the drive-by one where you kind of pass the glass under your nose and you get a very interesting set of aromas when you do that.
Right. So excuse me, the phenomenon that you get is that if you're so focused on a smell for so long, eventually it's going to saturate your senses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is where I say, like, grab the collar of your shirt and like, just give that a sniff in between. Cause it kind of resets. You're smelling something completely different. Then you go back to beer and you're sort of smelling it fresh. But what I talked about the drive-by is passing it sort of left to right in front of your nose.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of forcing a change in intensity. Cause, you know, it's like watching a cat. You know, a cat's like watching the backyard and, you know, doesn't see anything. But the second something moves, you see their head, like, just, they're locked on. It's because they detect the movement. So, like, our senses are often sort of set to detect change. So if you force a change, it becomes something that you can sense more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works really well for me. Are there similar things you can do with taste, for example?
Yeah, the technique for tasting, and this actually came out of one of the BYO classes that I did, where one of the students was like a dentist or something, you know, something that had to do with the mouth. And I was talking about like how, you know, how people swallow. And he's like, well, a lot of people just don't know how to swallow properly. Hmm. Like, what?
Okay.
Like, yeah, right. So if you actually want to taste something, it's important for the liquid to pass over your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of makes sense because that's where all the taste buds are, right?
Seems so.
So it says like a lot of people when they swallow the liquid actually goes sort of around the tongue.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's kind of like a rolling action, a wave kind of, you know, your tongue is sort of undulating a little bit
and, uh-huh.
you know, carry the beer over the palate.
Interesting. I never heard that one before. That's very cool.
Yeah. So
you know, what are the basic steps? What are the basic steps you go through when you're if you're sampling a beer? Just walk through it quickly, maybe.
Yeah, the score sheet sort of captures the sequence. You know, you smell it, you look at it, you taste it, you assess, you know, how it feels in the mouth, and then you write down what you think about it. Those mm-hmm. are the five major sections of a BJCP score sheet.
And that's how you do it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Step by step. You know, I bounce around usually because the aroma of the beer might change as the beer warms up,
mm-hmm.
especially if the beer is served on the cold side. You find more aromatics coming out. So, you know, usually the very first thing I write down, because it's not going to change, is the appearance. You know, the color and what the head looks like and how clear is it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll smell it. I might take a few notes, but I won't sort of finalize that. Then I'll taste it. And I'll often do the mouthfeel section next because body and carbonation are something you could write down really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, other sort of mouth sensations. And then you can sort of focus on the flavor. And the aroma is really tied closely to the flavor. So as you're going through and you're thinking about, you know, what do I taste first? What do I taste on my tongue? What do I taste in the finish? You know, how bitter is it? Does it have any alcohol burn to it?
Mm-hmm.
The aromatics often come when you swallow the beer and exhale through your nose.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get sort of direct smells, but you can also get there. It's called retronasal smells when you exhale with your lips closed. So you're forcing the air back through your nose. You can often smell more, you know, it's passing over the same.
Kind of the same idea with passing it over the tongue, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, aromatics going in or out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're assessing them after you've swallowed, they're warmed up. So you might smell more of them anyway.
Well, what makes an award-winning beer different from the dozens of other beers in a given category?
For me, it's a beer that's really kind of fresh. So it's not stale or oxidized.
Mm-hmm.
The flavors just sort of pop. It's got a good balance for the style. For me, I like beers generally to be cleanly fermented, no off flavors. that they're well attenuated, so that they're not like heavy in the mouth. You know, some styles might call for that, but in general, I'm looking for sort of purity of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you handed me the beer blind and said, what is this? That I'd have a better than average chance of saying it's this style. You know, if I can recognize the style without you telling me what it is, then it's probably a good example. So does it nail what a, you know, my expectation of the style, and is it super fresh? Those are the beers that will just sort of jump out.
I've noticed that some people are much better at picking out certain off flavors. Is there a method you can use or a talent you can develop for finding and correcting certain off flavors in beer?
That's a rough one. It's you know, I've thought about this before with, we have these off flavor kits and people say, oh, if you take this, then, you know, you'll know these off flavors. It's like, well,
yeah, we do those a lot at the Brew Your Own when I do the live events. So we usually do those, and, you know, I think a lot of, but I found, you know, some people are much more sensitive to certain flavors than others. And, you know, some of them I can pick right out, and some of them, even though I know what the flavor is, I've got the key, I still have a hard time, you know, separating them. Whereas other people in the class can pick it right out again. It's interesting. I think a lot of it has to do with just the way we perceive things.
Yeah, and those are kind of unnatural because you're spiking a beer with a chemical.
Yeah.
And if there's a fault in a beer, it should be as a result of a process, not because somebody like added something to it. So there's often other visual indicators that, you know, might be there. Like if there's diacetyl in a beer, you know, in addition to smelling it and tasting it, it has like the slickness on the tongue.
Right.
You know, if there's some problem with oxidation in a beer, I mean, you can look at the color and it'll have like, you know, it'll look duller and browner. You know, there's more to it. So it's being able to pick up all those clues, not just being able to identify a chemical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, excuse me, the when judges train about this, I mean, you read about what the perceptions are, but you really need the experience. You know, if you're judging in a competition, let people around you know that you're a judge in training, and if they get any classic faults, please save some so you can try it, because you really have to experience it for yourself. Because, yeah, you know, think about it. If you've never had an orange before in your life and somebody's like trying to describe it to you, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, if you just tasted it, then you have that kind of memory. So it's the same thing with these faults. You can read about what it's like, but to have somebody who knows be able to say, this is it, this is what you should remember, and then you can worry about, like, how that wound up in a beer and what you do about it. Hmm. But you have to be accurate with your perception before you run around trying to fix something.
Well, I mean, that brings me to fixing things. We ultimately try and judge our beers, at least as homebrewers, so we can make them better. How do you go about, you know, let's say you've identified a flaw in the beer. How do you go about deciding whether it's a recipe change, a process change, some other change you need to make in order to make that beer better next time around?
Yeah, that's kind of an advanced skill for the brewer.
Yeah,
almost impossible for a judge to do that, because number one, you know, are you sure that that's actually in the beer? You detected something, you think it's this, but is it there or not? You don't know. Sorry. Then, you know, where'd that come from? If you're a judge, you don't have the recipe. You don't know what system they made it on. You don't know what they did. Mm-hmm. You could speculate on what might be likely, but if they have a completely different process, it could come from anything. So,
right. But I mean, you're a big homebrewer. How do you do it? How do you go about identifying, let's say you've detected something wrong in one of your beers, how do you go about adjusting and fixing it next time?
Yeah, you know, you try to get at the root cause. You try to work back from whatever that flaw is. Like, did it come from the ingredients? Did it come from the process? Did it come from how it's handled? What stage of the process was at fault? Because, you know, why should I go, if the problem is oxidation, you know, why should I, like, go jigger the recipe? Because, you know, there was nothing wrong with the recipe. It's just something that happened after it was in the bottle.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So, you know, focus on the area that introduced the fault that you're detecting. So that's where judging and brewing experience sort of intersect, is that you learn, you know, where these levers are. Because it's not just a matter of, you know, oh, I have this chemical in my beer and it shouldn't be there. So, you know, how do I deal with that? It had to come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So trying to isolate that is the hard part. And that comes with experience. Mm-hmm. You know.
Just, like a lot of things, yeah.
yeah. But, you know, if you're judging, sometimes if you run into a fault, like, I'll give you an example of something kind of obscure. I was judging a beer at GABF once, and I swear it smelled like roasted peanuts.
Interesting.
And I just, like, I have no idea, you know, unless they added some sort of peanut butter extract, you know, how, I don't know how to get that flavor into a beer, let alone get it out. And, you know, there was a brewer from like some you know, big industrial lager company, and they're like, you know, that's something that's malt related, you know, so look there. Like, huh, okay. So, you know, knowing where to look, it would be like, okay, so I would look at the ingredient. I would look at, you know, I would taste the raw ingredient. Is that kind of flavor there? Did this come from something I did during the mash? I don't know. So I would have to go and look at that. But, you know, first I needed somebody to point me, like, did this come from fermentation? Did this come from handling? Did the, you know, and they just said, this is a malt problem.
Wow.
Like, huh. Okay. I didn't do it to my beer. So, you know, I have no idea what that brewer did, but you know, now in the future, at least I'd say, if I run into that kind of a character, then, hey, this is where it's from.
How many iterations does it take to get to a really great beer for you? I mean, you've obviously done a lot of them.
More than half the time, one.
One? More than one?
You know, just one. It's
just one, okay.
It's, you know, you... You know, it sounds like Caddyshack, you know, see the ball, be the ball. You visualize, and you know, and this is kind of a golf analogy. This is like a Jack Nicklaus thing. It's like, you know, visualize the shot, you know, visualize the beer. What do you want the end beer to be? Work back from that and, you know, do everything you can to make that. And if you've brewed enough, if you know what ingredients taste like and, you know, how those ingredients get transformed during the brewing process, you should have a pretty good idea what they come up like. But more than half the time, the first time I make a beer is like, yeah, that's what I wanted.
That's pretty good. It usually takes me more than one shot, but that's excellent. Well, Gordon, I want to get your closing thoughts on the style guides as well as judging beer.
Yeah, this is kind of a topic I've been talking about a lot lately about, you know, last year I went from talking of, you know, here are some previews of what's going to be in the guidelines. Mm-hmm. People love that. But after the guidelines are out, you know, why would I give that same talk? You know, it's, you know, you can go read the guidelines and know what's in them. So,
sure.
So I like to talk about, lately, the kind of questions you were asking me at the start of, you know, what goes into the guidelines? So how do you make those decisions? What's sort of the behind the scenes?
Sure.
How do you better use these? You know, I think those are some cool things to explore. So those are some things that I've been talking about lately.
Well, and then, I was trying to get to how do you judge and make better beer too, you know?
Oh, yeah, get out and do it.
It's, exactly.
You know, it's, you know, it's any sort of competition that's around me that's doing something interesting, I'd love to go judge because, you know, I need that experience judging with other people. I want to see what their perceptions are because I always learn something from seeing what other people are doing. And mm-hmm. I'm always sort of assessing how judging is going using the guidelines during these competitions. So don't just go to the same places with the same people, you know, get out to some different places, do some, you know, travel a little bit and, you know, meet some new people and see how they're doing it. That's where good judges learn the most is through, you know, a variety of judges of different skills in different areas. You know, find people that have been taught by a different group of people. Otherwise, you're always just going to see the same influence.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gordon, I really appreciate you being on the show. I know you had a little bit of a cough there, but thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be here.
Yeah, always happy to be with you, Brad. It's a good show. I love your program and enjoy hanging out at events.
Yep.
So, you know, just bring a larger bottle of mead next time.
More mead. He always says more mead. Today, my guest is Gordon Strong, President Emeritus of the Beer Judge Certification Program. He's also author of the books Modern Homebrew Recipes and Brewing Better Beer. Thank you again, Gordon. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Brad. Thanks.
Well, a big thank you to Gordon Strong for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And I launched a new version of the Beersmith Discussion Forum a few weeks ago, as well as made some significant security upgrades. The Beersmith Discussion Forum is a place where you can discuss all things brewing, including techniques, ingredients, equipment, pro brewing, and our Beersmith recipe software. Join the conversation today at beersmith.com/forum. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.